before you came up, honey, that we talked about your childhood, your both childhood and family, last time, and you wanted to say a few things about your parents' death.
The only other thing I wanted to add was the dates, you know, of their death and what and the diagnosis. That might be important.
Yeah.
The history of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it on?
Yes, it's on.
My father died in 1942 of a dissecting aneurysm. He had seen my brother off to the service on Monday, and Tuesday he collapsed at work and died on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Mother died in 1949 of coronary. She was in St. Joseph's Hospital for an hour and died here suddenly. I was in New York studying at the time, and they called me and told me, and I came home right away, of course.
Maybe from there you could tell us about your entrance day, or the day you entered the community, and when you came to Baden, who came with you?
I entered the community on September the 8th, 1930. I was accompanied by my mother and my aunt and my Aunt Ella and my cousin who drove the car, and Mrs. Riddle and Ellen always to enter with me. We didn't have a car, so the car was loaned to us or brought down. We were brought down by my cousin, who happened to have a car at the time. I didn't remember too much about the day, except that we were all very much excited I had quite an emotional evening before that. My father, I think, cried for 3 hours, and my brother, my older brother, and mother was quite calm. I, like any teenager, was just anxious to get on with what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I think, ready for an adventure, as it were. So we got here. I had entered with two girlfriends, sister, or Ellen Riddle and Joseph and Sarah O'Donnell. And we went and we had our postulant dress, and we wore a postulant bonnet that extended about 5 or 6 inches.
The covered wagon effect
bonnet. And we were taken, we went to dinner. Of course, everything was, you know, new and exciting. That evening, we were shown to a dormitory. I think there were 7 or 8 of us slept in it. Sister Rita Marie was in charge of this. She was a canonical, I think, at the time. And the thing that sort of awed us was the pitchers and buckets that we used for washing and emptying the water into, you know, and it was one large cupboard extended the whole length of the wall where we put our good habits in. I think that was about all we owned at that time, maybe. I don't know what else we could put in it. We had a suitcase, the things we brought. And one thing I remember, this is just a funny aside, was that Sister Rita Marie was so clean and so exact about everything, and we weren't. And she used to tie a string on her pitcher and her jar so that she would have something clean, and we would change the strings. So that we all got clean buckets and pitchers without too much energy on our part. We observed night sounds, I think, very well. We had to. And I think we, well, we survived. And, everything was new. As I said, challenging and interesting. We were a little frightened about things, and we had our regular course of homesickness. I was only in the here about a month when I got word my mother was going to have gallbladder surgery. And I was permitted to go home and, or to go to the hospital and see her. And also to go home the day before she went to the hospital, which was quite an experience and a surprise. And I remember my younger brother, who was just in the eighth grade, asking me if I was allowed to eat a chocolate bar. I'd only been away for about a month. I don't know what he thought of that.
You're saying you had been home the day before your mother had surgery.
And I got all sponge in the hospital to see my parents. So my first visiting day passed with no visitors. And that was kind of a disappointment because we had, you know, the first visiting day is such an important one. But the rest of them passed with regular visitors coming up. Family coming to see me, and I had my usual bout of homesickness, which wasn't too long.
When you entered, what were some of your first activities?
My first activity, my first assignment, I think, was to wash the pots in the kitchen. And I remember one pot in particular, I don't think I'll ever forget it. It must have been, it was a huge iron pot. About as big as, well, larger than a roaster. Mm. And it was iron, completely iron and black, and about 12 to 15 inches deep. And I could hardly lift the whole thing. And I remember the washing all the pots and pans and the grease and the dishwater. I mean, it seemed like it was greasy. It was no matter what you did to the soap, we used the homemade soap.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we survived it, but I was sort of grateful about that assignment because some of the others had the clean chickens, and I think that would have been the end of my vocation. I didn't have to do that. I was quite willing to do pots and pans. And we also sat out on the porch in groups and prepared vegetables and cut beans and elf berries for jelly and all that kind of thing. And that was kind of a nice time. I mean, we enjoyed that. We also ironed. We used the old flat irons. And we'd have our certain day to go out and iron linens. And the other sisters, they taught us how to do that. We also ran the manual. And I don't know, no matter how hard the work was, we seemed to enjoy it. We had fun, made fun out of it, and of course we always had lunch. It was never, I don't think it was ever imported from New York, but it was good. And bread and butter and jelly and milk, yeah. I guess. And
that was that big old wooden porch outside the kitchen before it was remodeled.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
where
right.
You did the vegetable peel.
That's right. And also the... I guess the laundry's still there, the same laundry.
Oh, yeah, same laundry.
I haven't been down there in
Sad irons.
Sad irons, yes. Is that what you call them? I just always knew they were cast iron. And endless bundles of linens, it seems. And nobody ever seemed to correct us. I mean, you must have done them properly. That was my... When I was at Christmas time, as a postulant, I was sent out to St. Richard's to teach. And I had the third grade there. And I was very properly spoiled there. I wasn't permitted to do anything. Maybe I couldn't do anything. I
anybody.
I did succeed doing a few things. My former music teacher was there, and she continued to give me lessons. And one night I got up from the piano and said, "Good evening, sister." And she said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Oh, I forgot. I was going to go home." And I also broke a window there, and the only job they gave me to do was to eat some fudge, and I beat it too much. I lasted there, and as I said, I was spoiled. They made my profession habits for me. Sister St. Martin and Sister Marie Alphonse made my profession habits, or not profession, but reception habits for me. And I went back to the Mother House for retreat before reception, and then after reception, much to my dismay, I was not sent back to St. Richard's. I was sent to the hospital to take care of the sisters' dining room there. And that was a real challenge. Sister Anna Mary was in charge of the dietary department, a beautiful character, but stamped with the idea that, you know, the more noise you made, the better the sister became. And the first thing she said to me when I arrived was, "Well, you're not very big." And I couldn't do much about that. But we had our moments back and forth, but we became fast friends. And I remember that any time I would break anything, the sisters would all stay in the dining room until I reported the sister, sort of a support to me. I was so homesick there that one day, after the sisters had all left, I ate 12 junkets.
Oh my.
I was so homesick. I also made up a song. At that time, it was a pop. Maybe I'm being too verbose, right?
Yeah.
At that time, there was a song, Keep Your Sunny Side Up, and I made my own words to it. So while tears would be streaming down my face, I'd be singing this, "Keep Your Sunny Side Up, Up, Let Your Laughter Shine Through," and I'd keep singing to myself. And so I was there until July, I think. And then I was sent back bathing for the summer. In the following September, I went to St. Ray's Hills to teach the fourth and fifth grades, and there had the very distinct honor of being reported to the bishop. Because I was teaching the same thing to, so this woman said, to the fourth and fifth grades. Now, what I was doing was, you know, the tables are tables. So when we'd have the fourth table, I'd have the fourth table with both classes, because it saved time, and you had to, when you had two classes, and they were large classes. I think there were 50 or something in the class, and I had the two grades there. I would teach them the fourth table together, or the fifth table together, so I was reported to the bishop. So a sister came to me and told me, and of course I cried buckets.
Mm-hmm. Who told you?
The superior.
Who is that?
It was also the principal, Sister Austin. And so I, after that, I had to teach them separately, but it was sort of a ridiculous procedure, but I had to do it because I was in trouble. I thought it was a terrible thing that I had reported. We had some, I did the sister, I don't know if you want this part of my movie, but I did the there, part of Sister Mary Irene, Sister Cecilia, Sister Basil, just beautiful people, Sister Consuela, who saved my life on occasion, Sister Esther, Sister Marie Helene, Sister Austin, Mary Carmel, I think. We had number 12 of us, and we were the 12 apostles, Alberta. Did I say Esther?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't recall, you know, right off the others. But it was a very, very wonderful group of sisters. Sister Marie Lynn was very timid, and I spent half of my time trying to pull her out of her shell. And we had some funny experiences together. She caught it all now where she was then. She was, we slept upstairs in the, in a room, a very small room upstairs. And one night, the New Year's, the outside bells were ringing, and she didn't know what in the world was. You know, she jumped up to look out the window, and of course she couldn't see anything. And we had many, between the two of us, we had said very interesting experiences. We used to take long walks up to the park there, the, what was that,
the zoo. Remember, you got ready for the persecution.
Yeah, we got ready for the persecution at that time. You know, the news media was pushing for pushing stories about Russia and what have you. We were always pushing for the revolution.
We listened to the lions roar, and we think how we would feel, you know, when we were fed to the lions. They always roared.
Austin was of the old school. Very interesting about Sister Austin was that she had gone with my father to a picnic one time. And my father was so grateful that he met Mother. My mother. But she was very fun, very light. But she, you know, was just different from my mother. And at any rate, one time, she wouldn't let us play cards. And so she said we could put the cards face down on a table and build a tent, put a tent of cards over it and see how many cards we could get up from under it without the tent falling down. Well, we got hysterical because at home we played 500 and what have you and so forth. So, but we were obedient to a certain point. Then Sister Consuelo got into the act and she told fortunes. And we would act all the harder, so Sister Austin said, since you people are enjoying us so much, you can do it every night. She thought we were moving this tent.
Two cards against
the cards. You know how you put a tent like this in a card? And all the cards are underneath. We weren't allowed to look at the faces of them. They had to be face down. And then we would pull these cards out like this to see how many we could pull out without knocking this little tent down. Well, you know, for people who are mature and intelligent, I think fairly intelligent, it was rather interesting. But we laughed. I don't know if that's enough for there or not. That's about all I have.
It's taken.
I don't want to put too much into it. I think I'm being too verbose.
Let's take a big skip, though, up to when you went from teaching into hospital work.
Well, that is a big skip. I had taught in the Holy Rosary High School for about 9 years, and the school was closing in 1947, and I went home to visit that summer. And while I was home, I got a call from Baden telling me that I was to come to Baden for the bulletin. The hospital car would pick me up at the Annunciation Convent. I couldn't imagine what this was all about because I was never sent for to come for the bulletin.
Was this
they
for the reading?
I didn't care whether I heard or not. Had to fight my way through it most times. So I told my mother that I wouldn't be back for a couple of days, that I had to do this. So the car was late coming down. It seems that I was supposed to see Mother before the bulletin was read, but I didn't get here on time, so they went ahead with the bulletin reading, and I'm sitting here, and I'm wondering, I hear this one being called out for this, and I knew I was there for some reason, some special reason, because it was just no other reason for my being there. And so they called out Mistress and Novices, and I thought, well, I wasn't that. And they called out this, that, and the other thing, and I wasn't that. So all of a sudden, I just heard Sister Mary Paul, Superintendent of St. Joseph's Hospital, all the practice, and spelled out go on the floor, but I didn't. I was rather pious, and I thought God's will be done. So, but I did, when I met Mother and Rancher, I told her that I would do the best I could, but I didn't know if that was suited for the position. And she said, well, we'll send you away to school. So, I cried for a month, I think, down here. They kept me down here for about a month. And then I went up to the hospital on, I think it was September, maybe 15 or 16, it was around there. And Mother Mary Grace was the acting administrator. And she met me and told me that my I was in the administrator. They called me superintendent of the hospital. And that after I'd be there a year, they would send me to school. In the meantime, I was finishing my thesis on for a Master of Arts degree at King University. I was working for the thesis. So she said I should finish that and be superintendent at the same time. So, and it was quite a challenge and quite an experience to be thrown right into that from having been in high school and having loved my work and having got to a point where I felt, well, now I can really teach. I have all this going to school behind me or just about. So that sort of went up in the air.
Did Mother ever talk to you about that assignment?
No. Not other than when I might have told her that, you know, that I wasn't too sure I could do it, you know. And that was just in the corridor that we met. So I was to stay there for a year and then go away to school. And Mother felt that Sister Mary Grace then felt that, you know, she should instruct me. So I remember some of the first jobs that I had was to reconcile the checks. And so I'm standing in my office reconciling all the canceled checks. And you know, it's just a matter of counting, like 1, 2, 3. Then I thought, don't tell me I've come to this. You know, and I started to cry and tears came down. Another thing she told me to do was to go down and put all the time cards in the slots. And that way I would learn the names of the personnel. Well, we had quite a large number of personnel, and to me, it all just seemed so, you know. I suppose there was wisdom behind it, but it seemed very difficult to take. I never turned a knob in that year without saying prayer of the Holy Spirit, because I never knew what was on the other side. One day a doctor came in and resigned. He was very angry. And I tried to tell him, you know, that we really couldn't spare his services. He was such a, you know, a very good surgeon and what have you, and so forth and so on. So he still went out. He was quite angry. So I went upstairs, and my sister was in her room. I went in and I said, oh, sister, I said, Dr. So-and-so just resigned. I felt it was always my fault, you know, it wasn't at all. Mm-hmm. And she said, don't worry about it. He's done that twice since I'm here.
Was this Sister Mary Grace you were talking to?
So, anyhow, I came down out of that. I worked in the front office, and I will never forget. I didn't know what half these tests were or anything about it. And so someone came in and ordered a GI test. And I thought to myself, a GI test, what's that? Well, I think, I'm not going to ask anybody, because I'm supposed to be the superintendent. And these people who are working in this office, except the sisters, know that I'm supposed to know something. So I'll just wait. So I waited, and someone said gastrointestinal. I really thought that the GI test was something that had developed during the war. Frankly, I did. I don't know. but this, you learn this way. There's a whole new vocabulary that had to be learned, you know. I would like to say this, though, about the hospital, sisters. I was brought into the hospital there to work right out of high school, you know. A neophyte who knew practically nothing of, I knew nothing about hospital. But no sister in that building, with all their years of experience, ever suggested or showed in any way resentment when an outsider was brought in. All they did was just turn in and help me with all they had, particularly Sister Ernest, who might have been the very one who would have caused to make some remarks. But nobody ever did. And I think that shows that they were really giants in those days, that they were big women. Because it's natural to resent that someone, really an outsider, coming in and being placed in a position of that sort. Another thing I think that showed the wisdom of Sister Mary Grace was that she made me the assistant superior, which gave me a little so-called cloud, if you want to use that term. I mean, it put me in a position where they couldn't be constantly going over my head about me or two, this sort of thing. Well, it was quite a growing period. Sister Mary Grace sent me to the first nurses convention in 12th after I ever got here. She sent me over to see Sister Adele at St. Francis to sit at her feet, learn something. She sent me to Erie to Sister Anna Marie, here Sister St. Joseph of Erie, was an administrator, to learn from her something about hospital administration. And eventually, some of it went in. I sunk in and I began to become a little more knowledgeable about what I was doing. In the meantime, my sister was concerned about my not having my thesis written, and she expected me to do it in the evenings. And I just couldn't. I was either too tired or too exhausted by that time to do too much of writing and research and what have you. So she called me one day and she said, "Now, sister, I want that thesis written because you're going to St. Louis in the fall. And you have to have it finished, and you have to have two courses in accounting this summer, so you get there and get it finished." And I said, "Well, sister, I'm doing the best I can, but I'm just not making too much headway." And she said, "All right, sister, every day at 2 o'clock, the hospital car will take you out to Carnegie Library, to the reference department, and you are to sit there and work on your thesis until you get it finished." So that's what I did every day. For part of the year, I went out there and worked on that. It got finished, and fast, thank goodness. So then I had to take these two courses in accounting. In the meantime, Mother was negotiating, Sister Mary Grace, rather, was negotiating with St. Louis University to have a school and hospital administration, which they didn't have. But she always claimed that she started. At any rate, I was one of the guinea pigs that went into the first course at St. Louis. I went there in the fall of 48. And after there, being there a year, it was under the auspices of the Catholic Hospital Association of St. Louis Jewish University. I was sent to St. Vincent's Hospital in New York City as a resident or an intern, and spent a year there. Now, Father Flanagan told me that he really sent me there because he knew that my background in hospital administration was not quite as advanced as some of the sisters who were in the course, because others had had 4, 5, 6, 10 years of experience, and I had none except that 1 year. So he sent me into a very good residency, and I stayed there until finished there in 1950. I went back to, I was writing a thesis for that too all the time I was at St. Vincent's. And my thesis was the laws of Pennsylvania as they pertain to the voluntary nonprofit hospital. and I felt that that would be helpful to me when I came back. Mm-hmm. The advantage of that first year at the hospital without any previous experience was one that taught me to what I really needed to emphasize when I did go into my course, mm-hmm. and what questions I needed answered. It did have its advantages, but it wasn't easy.
Who was in charge of the hospital then when you were away?
While I was away, Sister Dipna was the acting administrator. Mm-hmm. She had been and was superintendent of nurses. But she then was the acting administrator because Mother had gone home to be Mother Superior. And I think that's probably not her. I'm not sure about it, but I'm almost positive Sister Dipna was the acting administrator. And so I stayed there and was administrator or superintendent or what have you until 1958. My health wasn't too good the last couple of years of that period, but they didn't seem to be able to know what was the matter, so I just kept on moving as you move, you know. And during that time, the school, and this is not certainly not attributed entirely to my efforts, that these were things that happened. The school nursing, the school nursing was erected. The intern's quarters was built, and the hospital was renovated. But in 1958, I asked Mother, the Mother Superior, and I thought it was rather an unusual request to make, but I made it if I could go out to Mayo Clinic and see if they could discover what my problem was. And I went out and they did discover that I had a spinal cord tumor in my neck.
You had a what?
Spinal cord tumor on the neck. And it was rather serious to the point that it left me with some paralysis. And so when I came back, they kept me in a hospital room for a year because they didn't feel it was safe for me to be alone in my own room or without hospital, some hospital attention. But I used to get down to work each day after I recovered my strength. And I began to feel that a few things were getting away from me when I wasn't there, you know, or well, that they weren't just getting away from me, but that the whole process was getting a little weaker than it should. So I felt, too, that there's a whole person for that job. So I went to Mother, and I said, Mother, I've never asked to get out of anything in my religious life, but I feel, for the good of the hospital, I should resign as the administrator. And she said, yes, Sister, you may resign, but you are to serve as assistant. And so Sister Amadeus had just finished her course in hospital administration, where she had years and years and years of experience. She had been director of nursing and was a very competent person. She was just about ready to take over. So she was appointed administrator, and I was appointed her assistant. As assistant, I was the necessary and the usual duties of an assistant, but I had many departments in the hospital under my immediate supervision and control. And I was assistant administrator up until Sister Crescentia came as administrator and Sister Amadeus went back. Sister Amadeus, in the meantime, I guess it would be about 17 years later, got cancer and became gradually worse. And Sister Vicentia had been named counselor at one of our community elections, and she came here as administrator. She had been administrator at the Georgetown University Hospital, assistant administrator there. And she came on as administrator, and I still continued as assistant. Sister Amadeus reverted to the position of director of nursing until she died in about a year. And so then I went on as assistant until we came to consider the merger of the two hospitals. On our own, we had, the reason we had to do this was that our one building was old, and we needed more room. One thing, we needed to modernize, an expensive modernizing building, it very great. And the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Hospitals, that accredits hospitals, and without it you can't really operate at all, visited us, and we had never, through all the surveys in the years, we had never been without this approval. But they told us that they would only give us a 1-year approval because of our one building didn't come up to the code expectations, you know. And so we had made plans and was looking around trying to think of what we could do on our own. And we approached the Hospital Planning Association and said, maybe you have to go through them for approval. And they refused it to us after quite extensive efforts to have it approved. They told us that we would find another hospital in the same plight, that we could consider consolidating, and then they would approve it. So Homestead Hospital at that time was in the same plight. They had a building like that. They were only going to get one more year of approval. So the two hospitals agreed that, you know, that they would consider consolidation. And certain members from each board of directors, our board of directors, St. Joseph's board of directors, and Homestead board of directors were appointed as a planning committee to negotiate the consolidation. We had had an all-sister board of directors for many years, and then when we saw that this was coming, that board resigned, and a partial lay, partially religious board was formed because of these negotiations, but we needed a wider experience. And so the committees got together and planned what they would, how this would be brought about. And I think some unusual things were done in drawing up the articles of consolidation. We insisted that they accept the Catholic Hospital Code, which is moral code, which is rather difficult to do when you're applying with we were non-sectarian, but also a non-sectarian hospital, not run by sisters. But they did adopt it as part of the Constitution. They also got them to adopt a constitutional regulation that there would always be Sisters of St. Joseph on the board. And the only way that they could be removed would be that if the entire board voted to reject them. And that there always had to be one Sister of St. Joseph on the board at least. So unless she would vote against the community and herself, I mean, we were protected as, you know, being part of the hospital. They also appointed the administrator of Homestead Hospital was made the administrator. Sister Vicentia was made the assistant administrator. I think Sister was the more competent of the two, but being a new lay, so-called lay sectarian, you know, institution, mm-hmm. I think they, well, it just seemed that they felt that, you know, a lay person should resign, so forth and so on.
Well, you said they adopted a Catholic code of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Did there have to be discussions over particularly abortion and other things?
Oh, yes, all of those things. But the steering committee, as it were, you know, mm-hmm. But we also, there were all kinds of meetings, and we had, you know, our say, too. And we wouldn't have consolidated if they wouldn't have accepted it. I mean, we just wouldn't have joined with them because we couldn't ethically, you know. Mm-hmm. And another reason that we had to go through all this is that according to the present legal standards regarding hospitals, since we have had Blue Cross and other third-party payers, hospitals are considered as belonging to the people, to the public, rather than to the particular religious communities. I mean, if we had sold St. Joseph's or closed St. Joseph's in any way, that money would have had to be allocated to a charitable fund for hospital work. I mean, we could not have just sent the money down here today. It's a present tenant that doesn't, well, it comes out of the fact that, you see, if this had happened back before we had Blue Cross and 30 third-party payers, there would have been no problem. But there have been court cases all over the country in regard to this situation, and in every instance, the community has lost. I mean, for instance, there's a hospital, the name was St. Anne's or something of that sort, and it had to be set up as a St. Anne's foundation or something of that sort, and only allocated to some health care work. And that's what would have happened. We were fortunate to have had a very excellent board of directors, and a very ones who were very, very faithful to the Sisters of St. Joseph. And I think history in heaven will only reveal what some of them did and went through to protect our interests during this rather difficult period of negotiation. So I'm not sure I'm going to get all these, I shouldn't know all these dates, but I'm not sure I'm going to know. I think it was 1977, I think, consolidation was finally, I'm not too sure on these dates, I'm not sure. But at any rate, then they began buying land, and they looked at several sites, and they finally decided on the one that we have, which is 75 acres in Jefferson Borough. And it was called, we had, of course, had to surrender our assets, and Homestead had to surrender theirs. It became the South Wales Health System, a system because it was not only a hospital for the acutely ill, which is Jefferson Center, but we also had the Willis Center, which was the newer building at Homestead, as a long-term care facility. The home care center for all the home care units in the city, had their headquarters in Homestead. That was retained. Our interns' quarters was turned into an alcoholic clinic. The hospital itself was sold. Of course, the money turned over there for the building of the new hospital. And school nursing has not yet been sold, but it's part of the assets of the two hospitals. The board of directors, as I said, was augmented by the rest of our board, then the ones, you know, who had been on the committee proper, and some others in their board. And we had a joint meeting, which was a very stiff affair the first time, and we held our breath because we weren't sure how it was going to go, but it was surprising that very people we thought might be our worst enemies were very genial. So far we've progressed or it was increased in board and that members, we have a variance on board of directors at the last minute. The first administrator resigned, I think after a lot of prayers on our part.
Prayers that he would resign?
And then they negotiated for another administrator, and we have Mr. Yeffel as a present, so-called president, whose terms have been changed since. Mm-hmm. And Sister is vice president in charge of all that problem. Three people at the head, and the controller is the vice president in charge of fiscal affairs. Mm-hmm. The sister is in charge of protest. The activities of the general activities of the hospital. Mr. Epperton is in charge of planning. They all are responsible for different branches that they're responsible for. The hospital has to date been very successful. We have a slow starting, but we have the past year we've been running occupancy between 95 and 100%, sometimes 100% plus. Mm-hmm. And it's doing very well. We still have sisters working in the hospital, not too many, but the ones who have been there have been rather effective, I think. That plus the St. Joseph Hospital employees, I think if we ever have to withdraw from the South Hills health system, and I can see that we can come to that point as time goes on, we will have left a mark on that hospital. That hospital really has the spirit of the old St. Joseph's. It has, I think that it's something that would be rather